Grover Beach City Council of Monday, November 5th will be called to order, please. Invocation. Tonight, we're going to have the Reverend Bob Banker from the Open Door Church of Oceano. Reverend Banker.
Shall we pray? Our Father in heaven, we give thanks unto you again for your wonderful love and goodness to us. We are truly blessed to live in this land in which we live, and especially in this part of our nation where we're so blessed with the beautiful ocean and the mountains around us, and be able to look out and see the green now and just enjoy all of these to their families. This we ask in your name. Amen.
Tonight for our flag salute, we are going to have Jessica Dana. Jessica is a sixth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary. Jessica has been a Golden Gopher through all of her grades with the exception of the fourth grade when she moved to Tennessee. She loves living in Grover Beach because of the ocean and the wind. She is the president of the student council and is also a peace leader. Jessica is a good communicator and loves visiting and talking with her friends. She loves art, and when she grows up, she wants to be a famous artist. Jessica is accompanied tonight by her principal, Cynthia Fogarty, and her little brother and sister. And her mom.
Mom.
Okay, Jessica.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Jessica, I'd like to introduce you to Councilmember Ekbom.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Councilmember Lieberman. And this is our next mayor next month, Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Nice to meet you.
And Councilmember Arnoldson. Jessica, we have a little proclamation here for you, or certificate, excuse me, and a pin from our city.
Thank you.
Thank you. You did a wonderful job. May we have roll call, please?
Here.
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 Yes.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Jessica?
Test 1, 2.
Before you leave, would you come here, please? I missed something.
And Donna, I am here.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go home, do your homework.
I'm glad you looked at it like that, too, because we've all wondered what it was, too.
We don't have any goodie baskets here tonight for us.
It's okay.
Whoa. Okay, closed session announcements, none at this time. Ceremonial calendar, there's none at this time. But before we go on, I would like to introduce our newest council member, not official yet, but Mr. Chuck Ashton. Okay. Thank you, sir. And our other council member-elect is not here yet. Okay, moving on to public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. Council listens to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on the agenda. Is there anyone out there who would like to speak? Seeing no one? We'll move on. Moving on to the consent agenda.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Item 4. Councilmember Arnoldson.
Well, this item is a request for $28,000 to, I think it was 28, to for a study, and that was one of the lower bidders to reevaluate classification and compensation for our employees. And I know that when we... on our last employee negotiations, we agreed to do this, but I don't think that this council had any idea that it was going to be this expensive. And I was going to ask if there's a way that we could use a reopener to discuss this with our, or are we, as a council, steadfast at having to provide this compensation study at this degree of cost for the city. So I'm kind of asking for a legal standpoint. I don't know, or whatever.
I guess first of all, the council did appropriate $25,000 in the budget when you approved the budget this year. The proposal before you is a maximum cost of $26,000.
I thought it was 28. Okay.
And we looked at the five proposals that came in, and we sat down with folks from the bargaining group from SEIU, along with their business agent, and I think Gayla can explain in a little more detail how we got around to the recommendation that we unanimously agreed to.
Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. After we received all of the proposals, we actually sent out over 40 requests for RFPs. We had five respondents, and those are the five which are listed. We looked thoroughly at how they responded to what we were asking for, and the lowest bidder was a two-person firm that didn't quite meet all of our minimums that we were looking for with regards to completing the study. One thing they had left out was the ability to pay factor on calculating the study, and we know that with the ability to pay factored into the study that it is going to increase the costs that are associated with it. And we sat down and had a meeting with SEIU, and it was unanimously agreed upon as to who we would choose. And as you can see, we didn't go with the highest bidder. We didn't go with the lowest bidder. We went with someone who we believe will do a thorough and complete job for the city.
If I could follow up a little bit on that one point with regard to the ability to pay, that was an issue that the council was very interested in and was part of what the MOU required, that the study look at not only classifications and compensation, but also the city's ability to pay. And of the five proposals, as Gayla mentioned, only four of them.
They just were not as thorough in their answering the ability to pay question. That's mainly what we came down to, was who was going to more thoroughly look at the city's ability to pay.
So the other thing that we found was that actually Nash & Company, public sector, and one of the other two of the companies are really spin-offs of Ralph Anderson and Associates. And so all of the history, all of the applicable experience that they provided were common cities. There were common projects that had been done in the past. And so these teams had been split up and were now competing against each other for business, and what they were giving us as applicable work experience was really stuff that three different companies were giving us exactly the same work experience.
I guess my concern is, you know, we're a municipality. We put something out to bid, and we're accepting one of the higher bids. I know, and Martin, help me with regards to when we were in negotiation with this latest agreement, but I made comments in closed session when we were looking at this item, and some of those concerns I still have about this budget item, and I don't know if I can go and disclose. No? Kinda. My dog does that.
I would recommend if we are going to discuss items that were discussed in closed session, that this item be scheduled for closed session.
Okay.
But if you have a question outside of that realm, I'll be happy to.
No, I don't want to cross the line on that. But I raised a concern there that still hasn't been addressed to me. And so perhaps if there's consensus, we'll take it back to that forum. I'd like to handle this tonight, but I want to be careful. So that's definitely a concern of mine. And you know, we've hired Hayhurst in the past. And a couple of concerns. So.
From the when you initially started the question, from the standpoint of not going with the lowest bidder, and I don't know if that's where your question
That was part A.
Yeah, they're providing professional services, so we are able to choose. We're not obligated to go with the lowest bidder. We're able to choose the one that's going to be the most responsive and responsible, and will do the best job for us.
Okay, one last question, and I'll be done. Can someone explain in some detail that I can understand a little better about the last paragraph on the first page of the staff report? SEIU felt so strongly about that choice that it offered to delay the implementation of any adjustments?
The adjustments that are in SEIU's contract with regards to the classification and compensation study were supposed to take place on January 1st of 2005. They've delayed the implementation of any changes to July 1st of 2005.
Okay, delay. Okay, thank you. I still have a concern about something that I guess would have to end up in closed session. Thank you.
Councilmember Ekbom.
Ron, thank you for pulling this. There was several
liked Hayhurst's proposal because he indicated that he would be in the, you know, sitting in and talking with everybody about what it is that they do in their job, and that's a fundamental part of how you do a classification study. And some of these proposals didn't include the concept of actually interviewing folks, or they wanted to charge extra for interviewing because it takes time to do that and it adds potential complications in the process. And I think that the folks from SEIU recognized that sitting down and talking to every individual is an important component to figure out what people really do.
I have to tell you that I remember early on there was talk about us sharing the cost of this program, and this is just background information for negotiation. It's not anything other than information. I mean, and I think it's significant, a $26,000 study that no one has to accept or use. It's just an informational thing. Here's what this professional organization thinks is comparable studies. Salaries or whatever. I'm very enthused about the ability to pay portion of this, so I'm glad that it is itemized here in the analysis of compensation part of it. I have a problem. I'm guessing that they will pick different. Is this like a comparison study of outside of the county? Are any of these positions and their salaries going to be used from comparable cities outside of the county?
No. It's within the county. All cities within the county is what they will be looking at.
Okay. Because the sentence in here, we will perform a comparison of the ability to pay between Grover and the other cities.
And
so
all the cities, right.
We're
so
using
it'll be,
all this information, the salaries
it'll be apples
and the ability
and apples.
To pay. Thank you. There's only one thing that I would like to have seen in this. If we're going to go to this effort to look at job classifications and compensation, and they, in their first sentence, are saying, we will develop a labor market comparison survey, I would have liked to have seen a private sector portion of this.
Can we have just a minute, David?
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. If it would be agreeable to the council, could we take a two-minute break to see if we can fix a technical difficulty? Apparently, the meeting is not being broadcasted currently, at least audibly.
Okay.
So if it would be all right with the council to take a two-minute break just to see if something can
yes.
be done with that.
We will take a short break. We will return. discussion with Councilmember
Ekblom? I was just starting in on another point that I would like to have seen included in any kind of a salary comparison. We always talk about it, but we never get that far. Here's an opportunity for us to do it, to target a public-private salary range. If we can, even if we randomly picked a few positions and said we will look at a department head or a secretary or a maintenance worker and compare them with private sector jobs and just see where we are in comparison to that. If we're going to write up a classification, job classification, and study it with a comparable with the other six cities in the county, if we could add a nominal amount to have it compared with something in the private sector, I think that's an important information that a lot of the public feels is out of line already. And we can either prove it is or isn't. And this would be the time to do it. And so I understand it's late in the negotiations here to add another comparison, but maybe it would not be a significant amount of time and effort if it was randomly selected two or three job classifications and looked in the private sector and did a little comparison of salaries and total compensation. So those are my suggestions on this.
Thank you.
Mayor, I think that it would not be difficult to get Hayhurst and Associates to look at comparable classes. Administrative secretary, for example, would be something that would be fairly easy to look at in a private sector context. There may be a few other classes that would be comparable, and I think they'd have no problem adding that in. I don't think they would charge us extra for that. The area where we would have to be a little careful, though, is the concept of ability to pay, because the private sector ability to pay issue is different than the public sector ability to pay, I think. It would be a lot more difficult for them to...
That's Delta or some of these other people's ability to pay. They just lay off everybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not going to get... We can get information from public sector folks because it's public information. To get ability to pay from private sector where they do pay taxes, which we don't, and where they do make a profit, which we can't, makes that a harder kind of analysis. And so I think I wouldn't want to try to say that they'd be willing to do that, but I think we could certainly factor that in, and they could certainly report on that for those kind of comparable classes to say, you know, comparing us to other public agencies, here's what the salary range looks like. Comparing to other private agencies, not just salary, but total comp.
Right.
And factor in what the value and cost of benefits are.
Compare apples to apples, oranges to oranges and stuff. And I don't really think that ever happens when we do one of these studies, because we always compare ourselves to Aurora Grande, Pismo Beach, San Luis Obispo, the other communities in our direct area. And their general funds are never comparable to what we have. If we were to compare ourselves to Tehachapi or Hamford or I don't know, another little community that is smaller, you know, in a similar realm that we are, their general fund is similar to ours, or their population is similar to ours, or their tax dollar as far as people coming within the community. I mean, we don't have look how much transient occupancy tax we just don't have compared to other communities. So I think when we look at that, I think that we're a different community than Oceano. I mean, Aurora Grande or Pismo Beach. We don't ever compare ourselves to anyone that's somewhat similar to us, like Oceano or maybe Napomo Services District or some of the smaller districts that have the same inability to gather general funds that we do. So that would be another thing that I would say we might look at, is a couple of cities that are not right here in the Central Coast that do match up with a lot of the similar financial aspects that we have. And then, once again, I had asked whether this was a reopener, if we had ability to reopen, because we looked at $25,000 in our set aside, $25,000 in our general fund as, I mean, in our budget to do the study. And we're talking about 26. Is that a reopener? Can we say we weren't prepared to spend 26? We'd like to go back and reopen and see if the SEIU is willing to pay a portion of that or half of that. And that had been thrown on the table at one time, if I'm not mistaken. But is there a potential to reopen? Do we have that ability, or is it just not negotiable?
Again, the potential is always there to renegotiate or reopen. But I would recommend that any discussion in that area would take place in closed session.
Okay. Thank you.
No other questions?
Everyone's raised some really good points, so when we get to the point, I'd like to make a motion.
There's no other discussion.
Well, addressing Ron's concern, the ability to pay was the part that brought us back into the study with the other cities. When they have three times the income, their ability to pay is much higher than ours. If you put that on a per capita basis, it's very easy to see that we're not comparable or able to compete like that. So I think that's the whole idea of the ability to pay issue in there was to factor that in.
Well, the only thing I guess I'm saying there is if we found and I don't know what Tehachapi's general fund is, but if we found a city that was real similar in population and general fund, and we find out that they pay their community development director $70,000 a year, that kind of substantiates the fact that we are not a bad, we're not paying a poor wage, which
are about 47% of what per capita resources are on the average in San Luis Obispo County. If we were to look at cities of relatively comparable size that had per capita resources in the same area that we do, and then did a survey of their salary for comparable classes, that may be a good indicator of what other communities would do given the same kind of resource base.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's an entirely reasonable approach. I think that's a little bit more work than what we were talking about with regard to going to the private sector, because there's some need to make sure that they're comparable, but we could certainly discuss that with Hayhurst and see whether he'd either absorb doing that or how much he thought it would add to the agreement.
Okay.
I move that we continue this to a date uncertain with direction for staff to put this on a closed session.
I would second that motion.
Yes, sir.
As a point of clarification, I've been handed the actual MOU, and there are a couple of reopener provisions. Neither one of them would fit into this scenario. So the contract does not provide for reopening negotiations on this issue.
Even if we're above and beyond the money that we had set aside in our budget document, at that point, it would seem that we would either try and be within budget or maybe go back to the drawing board. I don't know if that's not feasible. Then do we go with
one of the provisions?
Then we either have to ask for more money out of our budget, or we have to go to a lower provider.
If it's the wish of the council, we will bring this back into closed session and discuss the details and more fully.
Okay, we had a motion on the floor, so okay. Do we?
Can I get a kind of time frame then? If we go back at the next meeting and have it in closed session and discuss it, and then it comes back at a meeting after that, back in the agenda, we're into January. Pretty close.
Also a new council.
There's new council, too.
New council, right. So I for one, I'm comfortable spending this amount of money if we can get Ron's idea of comparable other comparable cities and my idea of bringing in the private sector comparison. We all thought it was a good idea to have a cost, I mean, a salary comparison project.
Yes.
Just like to add, if possible, that the estimated time frame is going to be 17 weeks for the study, so that's 4 months. So if we're looking at January, we're looking at May before the study would be completed.
Sooner rather than later. I don't have a problem with that. I just think there are some details here that we'd like to discuss, and I know Councilman Lieberman brought some things up that should be discussed in closed session. So,
and I'll be gone from Friday of this week through the following week.
And there's no other council meeting until you, the new council takes.
Well, the new council will have a lot of work on their plate.
Load them up.
I think we put off the public work situation for the new council. I don't see any difference here.
So,
how about a special meeting on Wednesday?
Which Wednesday?
Day after tomorrow.
At what time?
6:30, whenever you want.
I will not be here. I have a meeting on Wednesday. Mayor Pro Tem Scholes can take it.
EVC?
Sand District?
Sand District.
Yeah, my Wednesday is booked.
Unless you do it earlier, you can't do it earlier in the day. No.
No.
Nope. He's got 3 o'clock. I have 6 o'clock. David's got golf.
Tea time. I can't do it. It is city.
It's 22nd? No, I'll be out of state that entire week. I could share I could just type up something and give it to Mayor Pro Tem Scholes or you, or just have to have it discussed.
Are you back on the 29th?
About the 29th.
I'll be back.
Oh.
He'll be back on the 29th.
Might as well wait till the 2nd. 3rd, put it when we. Can this be an emergency?
The 29th. Okay. 29th.
That works for me.
Okay.
6:30.
So, yes.
So we'd listed both as closed session and open session item that you could take action.
Is there a way to have emergency meeting, closed session meeting tonight because of conflicts of
Wednesday? Hmm? Well, actually 24 hours from now. But there's a planning commission meeting.
No, I meant tonight.
Yeah. No. Okay. So there was a motion on the floor, so how do we do this?
Do you want me to? Yeah, I'll continue to the a special meeting on the 29th.
Okay. There's a second person of the motion?
Yes.
Okay. So you have that, Donna? All right. Okay. Could we have a voice vote, please? All those in favor of the 29th?
Aye.
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 No. I'll be here.
Okay, moving on to item 5, appropriation.
4 is an appropriation of an additional $18,000 to complete the update of our development impact fees. The City Council, with its budget year 05, allocated $25,000, and we received 2 responses from the request for proposals, and both consultants had an estimated cost of $40,000 to complete the work. What we're asking for is the $40,000, basically $25,000 that was approved, $15,000 for the consultant, and an additional $3,000 for our city engineer to provide the support services that would, which may be needed upon providing additional information to the consultant. If you have any additional questions, or I'll be happy to respond to anything you may have.
Yeah, Jay, could you maybe clarify for me? We're talking about development impact fees and raising those, yet we are having staffing issues. So one of the concerns I had was that we're continuing to talk about raising fees, but are we raising our level of service? Can you tell me if the two, if this is a function of that? Or?
No, it's not. And basically what we're trying to do is cover the cost of infrastructure expansion and basically for your water system improvements. If we need to take a look at that, see if we're collecting covers the actual cost of doing that, transportation improvements, the fire department fees, if that's really sufficient monies to pay for the fire protection facilities that we're collecting on. My intuition tells me that it is not sufficient to cover that cost based upon our needs. As part of the study for the development impact fees, our CIP program certainly will be an integral part of that, showing what our future needs are and what the development impact fees should be to be paid by new development occurring within the community to cover their fair share cost of those.
So it's to cover the new development's potential impacts on the existing infrastructure.
That's correct, yes.
Thank you.
Further, Merritt should point out that AB 1600, which is 66,000 of the government code, requires that cities who impose impact fees do this kind of analysis at least every 5 years. And it's been over 5 years since we've done that.
Is there any questions, Councilmember Ekbom?
We're required to review the basis for the impact fees. It's not required that we spend a $40,000 study. It just
we're required to have a plan for what they are. We're required to cost out that plan. We're required to come up with an allocation base for that, and we're required to do that at least every 5 years.
Would you call this an unfunded mandate?
I certainly would, and we
just add it to the list. Yep. Is that
I would
state
However,
unfunded
the state
mandate.
Has determined that it's not an unfunded mandate because the state has told us we can pass these costs on to the folks who are paying the fees.
Self-perpetuating.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
Councilmember Lieberman.
No questions.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Moving on to item 7, creation of a planner. So 1, 2, 3 in job class series.
Yeah, I asked for this item to be pulled because I wanted to get clarification from staff. In the staff report, it talked about the planner one position requiring a degree, and then it talked about the position would require a degree and 1 year of experience, and I think the discussion was should education count for that 1 year of experience. I just wanted to make sure that the clarification is that you will substitute a master's degree for the 1 year of experience. Is that the intent?
That's correct. The education above the minimum requirement could be substituted on a year-for-year basis. So a minimum requirement is a bachelor's degree, and so if somebody has a master's degree that is 2 years worth of work, then they would be able to substitute 2 years worth of education above the minimum requirement towards the minimum requirement of practical experience.
Okay. And I did want to note that the proposed salaries appear to be competitive with the Tascadero. I did some quick checking on my own, so I don't have an issue with that. I do have a question with regard to the Assistant Community Development Director position. I don't know if this is the appropriate form, but
That's not a position. It's a classification.
The classification. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Is that a I'm just curious if that's a classification that should be
basically
made.
What the exhibit lists all of the classifications that the council has approved. These are not positions. And so so basically we have a we would be reallocating that a position that we have currently as an assistant planner to a planner one, and we currently have a planning manager position that we would reallocate to a planner three. We don't have a position of assistant community development director, but you have the class there if you wanted to use it sometime in the future.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just kind of curious if we really want to keep that classification in an organization this small. Do we want to keep that classification?
I would have no heartburn if the council wanted to eliminate that class as part of whatever action you take on this item.
Okay. I don't know how everyone else feels about that.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that that was not an item that was agendized, so we could bring you back an amended after you take action on this, if it's the council's wish to have that item in front of you for that
okay.
particular class.
Can you put that on the 29th?
Sure.
Well, I don't know how everyone else feels, so this we'll find out.
It's an empty slot and just another staff requirement. Load them up.
Well, I think it's...
For example, we have fire chief listed there. We don't have a... I don't let Terry know, but we don't
have
actually.
He's not even listening.
We are not filling that class.
I understand that. I guess I'm just thinking for an organization.
See, and then we'll bring it back. Can I have a motion, please?
I'd like to move that we adopt this resolution, amending the classification and compensation plan resolution number 0273 to create a planner 1-2-3 job class series.
Second.
Okay, and a motion by Councilmember Lieberman, second by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes. Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, moving on to public hearings. First reading of zoning ordinance text amendment relating to the installation of curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements.
Mayor, members of the council, the city council first considered this item on October 18th, and you requested some modifications on November 1st, and from the November 1st meeting, we continued to tonight's meeting for specifically looking at the criteria which would cause the installation of curb gutters and sidewalk. Primarily, the two issues that are associated with the amendment is that single-family residential units that are expanded by 40% shall include a street conform of no more than an average of 4 feet and the installation of curb gutters and sidewalks. The second part of the amendment that the City Council discussed at the last meeting was that all other construction of any size consisting of new construction or additions shall install curb, gutter, and sidewalk and all necessary street conform. And all other construction is commercial, industrial, multiple family. Those modifications have been made in the attachment number one of your staff report, and staff would be happy to respond to any questions that you may have.
Is there any questions? Any questions, David? Okay, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Okay, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to council. Is there any discussion? Any questions to staff?
No questions. I just wanted to say to staff, thanks. Nice job of addressing our concerns. And with that, I'd move staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? Okay. On a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, second by Council Member Lieberman. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
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 Yes. Moving on to item 9, first reading of a zoning ordinance text amendment relating to the installation of utilities underground.
Mayor, members of the council, again, this item was first considered on October 18th, continued to your public hearing of November 1st. From the November 1st meeting, the city council requested staff to further modify the proposed amendments that would require underground utilities of all commercial, industrial, and multiple family projects of any size, and that the undergrounding of utilities to infill single-family residential development and remodels would only occur if there's a utility
between item C2 and C3. And the reason I asked that question is I kind of thought number two was getting at the issue of the secondary dwelling units that were the state mandate, but three seems to pick up on that as well.
Yes.
So if you could make
primarily we're receiving a number of applications for PUD, anywhere from 2, 3, 4 parcels, and this was really to address the two-unit development that it has an existing AP in. They subdivide it and create two parcels, record that parcel map, and then they would construct their two units or three units on that PUD. So anything under two units or less, basically no undergrounding would be required except for from the main line. They wouldn't have additional overhead lines coming into the new parcel map. And that was the intent of number two. Number three is the second dwelling unit, which is built on the same parcel without division. And so that's how we were trying to construct the ordinance.
Okay.
Councilmember Arnoldson, is there any more question?
Well, I did. I just wasn't sure if this was the appropriate time because I had a question of the city attorney.
Okay.
And the question was, if we were to modify this evening, has it been proper notice or would it become another first reading? I guess with that clarification, I'm trying to figure out if we should exempt a two-unit parcel map with two new homes from undergrounding utilities.
And
why? Why? Two new parcels?
Well, I'm thinking if someone is subdividing property and creating a two-unit PUD, then they should have the wherewithal to underground the utilities.
Well, unfortunately, they occur in R1 zone districts. They're usually 7,000 or larger parcels, and they're like an infill project. And usually the utility line is either in the back portion of the property or it's out fronting the street. And so you have parcels on either side, and then you come up with the same scenario that we discussed previously of the infill, where you have if the utility poles are in back and they're not on, they don't have easement for it, they have that kind of issue. They'll have to set a new pole and underground from there. Basically that's what this requires, is that it doesn't require that. But if they have three, they have to underground from the main lines. And
yeah, and I'm tracking with Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something that was very interesting. You said if it's in an R1 district.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in reading this, I didn't get that distinction.
No, and we're not really, it's single-family units. They can, as you know, build single-family units in the R2 and R3 zone district rather than multiple-family units.
Okay.
And these are single-family units that we're talking about, the exemptions and relaxing the undergrounding requirement. As the current code currently requires. So.
Okay, thank you.
Do we use the foundation just for the lower square?
Well, as part of the current proposed amendment to you, the trigger has been eliminated. The calculations for the 40% and all those kinds of issues have gone away. Now it's just straightforward. If they don't have a utility pole,
no, I'm just saying with the previous
proposal.
Yeah. Never mind. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just something's going through my head here, so
okay.
Forget it.
Any questions on this side?
Yes. And John, you raised an issue, and I want to make sure that I'm tracking with something if it's a concern from my read on this, if we're splitting, and Jake, help me out. I mean, if we're splitting a lot, we're going to build two residences. The utility, the power service is going to go to the primary source somewhere, and at that point it's undergrounded.
That's correct.
One service connection, right?
Well, what you will have is one connection to the utility pole. From there, it's all underground.
Okay.
And it's not the intent to have the overhead lines coming off the existing utility lines.
Okay. John, is that?
Yeah. No, I think he answered the question, and I think I probably misread number two a little bit because it looks like it was previously existing lots, not part of a subdivision. Right. So if that's the case, then we're okay.
All right. That's all I have. Thank you.
Councilmember Ekblom. I just have a silly question, Jake. When they put it underground, has there ever been cause where if something goes wrong, who's responsible for it, whether it be cable or whatever, or, you know, to find that connection? I'll tell you why I'm asking. Okay. It's because the phone company cannot find the box on my house. They know it. I have phone.
Yeah.
They can't find the wire that comes in. That's strange, I know. And everybody who's been out there looks all around and everything.
I can't help you.
I know you
I'm
can't.
Sorry. I cannot answer that one.
I couldn't either.
But in terms of new construction and creating the easement, the utility companies will extend the – well, the applicant will extend the my mind went blank – the infrastructure, conduit.
The conduit,
you.
Yeah.
And then be within an easement area, and it should have as-built for that. But nowadays they can utilize the detectors to find out where the metal is, and should be fairly easy to find.
Okay. Yeah. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on this item? We have a good crowd tonight. Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to council.
I move the staff recommendation.
May I have a second, please?
I'll second.
And a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, second by Councilmember Ekblom. Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Okay, item 10, first reading of a zoning ordinance text amendment relating to installation of fire sprinkler systems.
Larger would be required to install fire sprinkling systems. The all other additions, as clarified in the ordinance, are the commercial, industrial, in multiple family type of projects. So again, staff has provided those changes in attachment number one as presented to you, and if you have any questions, we'll be happy to respond.
Is there any questions, staff?
No. None. And also the fire chief is in the audience.
Did he leave?
No. He's here in case you have any questions of him.
Okay, this is a continued public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions of this item? Batting 100. We'll bring it back to council. We'll close the public hearing. I'm sorry. Now we'll open it to discussion. No discussion?
I had a little discussion. I understand where we're going with this, and I'm still opposed to it. And I think it's improved vastly from the previous one with the 40% and the new way to compute the square footage. I think it's helped single-family residences. But the new construction at 1,000 square foot and larger, I think, is too restrictive. It's too small of an area. And that's the only reason I'm voting no. So,
okay.
Thank you.
I'll move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, and a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, second by Councilmember Lieberman. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No.
No.
Okay, moving on to council committee reports. Councilmember Arnoldson.
I have no reports at this time.
Okay. Councilmember Lieberman.
But nothing to report at this time.
Councilmember Ekblom.
Well, now I want to know why you're laughing. I have nothing to report. Sorry.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
I will graciously accept these three gentlemen's 3 minutes.
She thinks.
EVC, on December 5th, there was the Economic Outlook 2005 or UCSB forecast. I'm sorry, November, on November 5th. And we attended that. Basically, just to be real brief, it talked about California's economy is finally showing signs of life after yet another extended recession. And it pretty much said a lot of the things that we already know, that San Luis County's economy is heavily concentrated in the government sector and the utility sector. Normally, this protects the county from worse economic cycles. It did say that California's fiscal crisis has caused a delayed recession in San Luis Obispo County. Obviously, went on and on about the price of housing. It did talk about jobs. Salaries on private jobs had actually gone up a little bit, but housing still is, for the most part, unattainable for working families and individuals. But it was great information. I have a copy of the disc and the report. If anyone is interested, I will pass that on. Happened, and obviously, funding is a priority. I did, in fact, challenge the board members to take a look at making rail a higher priority, because right now the draft document has it as a low priority. So we're going to be having staff go back and at least look at and see if it is something that might be attainable over a 20 to 25-year period. You know, when we talk about a forecast or a vision for 20 years out, you know, it's not very visionary to continue doing the same things in the same box. So we're going to ask them to kind of think outside the box and see what they can come back with. As everyone knows, this Wednesday, the additional surf liner train that is coming from Los Angeles to San Luis Obispo is going to be starting up. There's a ceremony starting. You can actually get on the train in Grover Beach at 12:15, take the long ride into San Luis Obispo. I think it's about a 20-minute ride or so. They'll have the festivities and whatnot, and then train will be returning back to Grover Beach at 1:20. So you'd get home about 1:40, 1:45. I believe the cost is, I think it's $5 or $10 round trip. So I don't know if you all asked to have a ticket, but it's certainly exciting times. And this train will, in fact, on a normal schedule, get to Grover Beach about 12:15, 12:30, and heading down. Eventually, heading back to Los Angeles, you can get on at about 1:40 and get down to Los Angeles about 7, so it's exciting. They're still in negotiations on the northern leg from SLO to San Francisco. The estimate is that it would take another $3 million to do that, but they are negotiating with Caltrans, Union Pacific, and Amtrak, so we're hoping something happens on that within the next year or so. Quickly, the Lodge Conference Center, we continue to meet with state park reps. We are close to getting an operating agreement going. We've had some initial discussions about constraints analysis on what might affect the ultimate layout of that project, and the three big ticket items looks like they're going to be biology, or the biological resources, archaeological, and the fiber. As everyone knows, Global Crossing comes across the property, and there are some easements on the property that we have to figure out exactly where they are. We continue to communicate with the existing concessions through the state reps, and we seem to be, I think we're making great progress on that. I have a SCAT meeting on Wednesday, and I have nothing on Tang and the lead committee on housing.
You haven't
How'd
coming
I do?
Up. You haven't coming up, don't you?
What's
on
that?
Housing for league on the 19th, 18th, 19th.
Yeah, that's a special subcommittee group, and I didn't want to bore everyone with the details on that.
Good. Okay, I'm going to have a special park and rec meeting this Thursday, and I'll have a sanitation district meeting on Wednesday. Let me see. Oh, and I want to bring to your attention that the Grover Beautiful meeting, again, was not held because there was not sufficient people there, and nobody said nothing. So that's why I think it's very important that we talk about combining the two commissions together. Okay, moving on to city manager's agenda. None at this time. City attorney's agenda.
Infill density projects. And walk in right at the wrap-up of Atascadero and Stafford Grover Beach. And the students, you know, a lot of times we worry that the projects are really interesting and very intriguing and very involved and not realistic. And what I found to be really refreshing is the students looked at 4 to 6 parcels in Grover Beach and gave suggestions and were very open. The project wraps up December 4th. What else would you like us to look at? And John Scholes was there. I was there. Bob Myers from the Planning Commission was there, and they took our feedback and were very open to it. So it was an exciting hour and a half or 2 hours. And that's it.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
Yeah. As everyone knows, Prop 1A passed. Prop 65 failed. That's good news. Measure O passed with about 82%. And I just wanted to take this moment to thank those who participated, to say that I'm definitely proud of this community for stepping up, realizing that this was a valuable resource for this community, and approving it with almost 82% of the vote. I wanted to acknowledge those who had helped out, in particular the Grover Beach Firefighters Association. Chief Fiebig and I actually went out and walked, and I'm not going to name individuals because I believe all of the full-time firefighters and volunteers stepped up in a big way in going out, walking in neighborhoods, and handing out the advocacy piece, and I just wanted to acknowledge them. I also wanted to thank the Grover Beach Police Officers Association. They did make a monetary contribution in the efforts, as well as several members did go out and walk. In particular, I wanted to recognize Angelo Lamone, Chris Sweeten, Kelly Cook, Dee Dee Polit, and Patty Klimo. Those were the five individuals who got out and walked. And I just can't say enough about the folks who had the opportunity to step up and who stepped up. Measure was very, very important for this community, and thanks to their efforts and thanks to the community, we can move on to bigger and better things.
Thank you. Lynn? Okay, I just want to say today that I had the opportunity to bring a third grade class through City Hall and explain to them what everybody's function was, and took them to the police department and the fire department. It was very nice. We let them sit up here in the council chairs, and they were excited, and they learned a little bit about what city government was about. Also, they'll be voting pretty soon. I want to remind everybody about the Christmas parade. The deadline for applications to enter the parade is this Friday. So people on the council, if you want to be in the holiday parade, it'd be nice if you can. Other than that, there's nothing else. Moving on to the improvement agency. Can we have roll call for the improvement agency of Monday, the November 8th? Oh, wait a minute. Huh? 50? No, we don't have any?
Here.
Yes. Okay. There's no other business at this time. Oh, the financing authority. I lost the page. Okay. Moving on to a special meeting agenda for the Grover Beach Financing Authority of Monday, November 15th. Roll call, please.
Board Member Arnison?
Here.
Board Member Eckbaum?
Here.
Board Member Lieberman?
Here.
Vice Chair Scholes?
Here.
Chair Santos?
Here. Public communications. Nobody in the audience wants to speak on anything. Not in the agenda. We'll bring it back. Consent agenda. Minutes of a special financing authority meeting from Monday, November 17th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Arnelson, second by Councilmember Lieberman. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Business, none. We adjourn. Now we'll move back to the regular meeting. Is that right?
It would be appropriate, Mayor, to perhaps open the special meeting, which is immediately to follow the meetings we've just had.
I want to make a comment on the council. You made a a council comment in council, and I've been thinking about it. I'd like to say something, so I don't know where that's going to come in, but if we're already done with the council meeting, I just...
No, we're going back.
Okay, I just...
Okay, now we're going to the special meeting. Open the special meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, November 15th. Could we have roll call, please?
Councilmember Arnoldson?
Yes, here.
Councilmember
Ekblom? Here.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholl?
Here.
Mayor Santos?
Here. Public communications? There again, anybody in the public that would like to speak on any item? Not in the agenda? Seeing none, we'll bring it back now. Going on to closed session, is the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following item, conference with real property negotiators, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. Is that good enough? You want me to read the whole thing? Okay. Now, after we finish this one... We're going to come back to the regular meeting.
It would be appropriate to announce the regular closed session as well for the regular meeting, and then I believe Councilmember Arnoldson had some comments as well.
Run that by me again.
It would be appropriate to announce the closed session for the regular meeting, which is on the regular agenda at the end.
Okay.
And then I believe before the meeting is adjourned, Councilmember Arnoldson
then
had some comments.
Also, for the regular meeting of November 15th, it's the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following item: one, public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, employee, city manager. And so before we adjourn, Councilmember Arnoldson had...
Well, you had made a comment about the Christmas parade and trying to kind of rally entries, and this is probably the earliest that the entries have had a deadline in my recollection for many.
Because they were making phone calls today to a lot of entries, and yours was mentioned also. Okay. So there is a lot of people that are going to be calling, and a lot of people that weren't called last year, they're going to be calling. So they're just trying to get a little bit more organized, and they weren't given any information from previous parades. So they're doing the best they can, and with the help of other people informing them of information. So yes, that I'm sure that will be fine.
Because I can remember Lucy Duvall, putting together the Christmas parade.
Friday night.
And we had the Christmas parade was Saturday morning. She was still getting entries and stuff,
yes.
And I'm in there. And
we had entries that morning,
yeah,
and we would
exactly
get the script down to the judges and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, no.
So like I just hope it doesn't have a real negative influence on our parade.
No. Our Park and Rec Department is working very hard to try to make this very successful. So, any other comments? Okay, we are going to be adjourned, and we are going into closed session. Thank you all for coming.
All the third graders have badges today, too.